everybody to the Fantasy Casting Agency podcast, the fortnightly podcast where we look at the reboot, remake, prequel, sequel, or adaptation of our favourite pop culture property. Hi, my name is Ron. Sort of joining me today is Marty, who isn't really going to be able to stick around. Marty.
Hi, I'm a non-fan, non-boy, and occasionally I'll join in with Ron to talk about some of those adaptations, casting options that we think would be appropriate in movies, but I sadly can't be with him this week. So I'm handing him over to the safe hands of Nate from Animation Nation to talk about Masters of the Universe.
Hello, everybody. Thanks for having me on the show.
And Nate, you want to give us a little bit of a rundown about Animation Nation and TikTok Toys? So I think it's also appropriate to talk about Master of the Universe with.
Yeah, I kind of wear many hats. I run a couple of pages on Facebook. Other than the Watcher podcast, I also run two new websites. One's called Animation Nation, which is news, reviews, and views on all things animation. So it's not necessarily just your mainstream Pixar or DreamWorks or Disney. It's running into your anime, also animated shorts, so giving those guys a leg up and showing off their awesome work, because a lot of the good stuff actually comes out of the animated shorts and then they get picked up by the larger companies. So when they're coming out of university or design school, that's what they're doing. It's just their final folio stuff. We also show a little bit of, you know, fan art. We also take people down memory lane and show them a picture that they might have forgotten about, like Wacky Races, for instance.
Yeah, sort of got us talking.
Yeah, and that was a huge response. You know, people started jumping on board with that one. So yeah, it's funny how an image can prompt people's minds and start thinking about, you know, the good old days. TikTok Toys is another new project of mine, and it's been 12 months in the making. I met some great people overseas who were all into designer vinyl. I automatically have a love of toys, being a G.I. Joe and Transformers and Master Universe and pretty much any other toy I can get my hands on collector. So I've been sort of toying, there you go, there's a pun for you. Mm-hmm. Toying around with this idea and wanting to showcase designer vinyl. We really don't get a lot of it here in Australia, and we'll get more of it, but it's definitely very much of a North American movement, moving into the UK now and especially into Europe. So it's a lot of fun, and you get a lot of creative people. And once again, it's news, views, and reviews on designer vinyl, your mainstream toys, as well as a little bit of art and, you know, a couple of T-shirts here and there and stuff like that. So that's TikTok Toy.
Yeah, and I'll link a couple of these things up on through our website, so if our fans can find you through there on our Facebook site. Well, first off, we're going to kick off with Masters of the Universe. This is definitely a fanboy favourite, and the research that I've done through the internet, there are lots and lots of people who are still talking, collecting, and interested in Masters of the Universe. There's also been talk of another remake of the film, so hence that sort of prompted this sort of conversation.
The dreaded reboot,
but I think that's a movie that can definitely do with a reboot, because it was a very ordinary movie.
Good old Dolph Lundgren, come on, he was great at his time. No, he wasn't at all.
I was just rolling my eyes and thinking, why am I sitting next to you if that was your real thoughts? So, Dolph Lundgren's okay in his own sort of way, and but yeah, there's...
Well, he was good. He was good for his time, because he was at the pinnacle of his career too. You know, I mean, he'd done he'd just recently Rocky IV, and been in a whole heap of other sort of what we would now classify as B grade films, but. Yeah. You know, he was right at the very, very top there. So, I mean, he was, when you look at all the other actors that were out there at that time, he kind of fitted the profile of that. I mean, it's like Jason Momoa when playing Conan.
Yeah.
You know, the movie wasn't that great, but at least he fitted the profile at the time. And I think that's what happens with a lot of films.
Yeah, he was sort of the Jason Statham of his day, so...
Yeah, but, he did everything.
Yeah, he sort of did all those sort of B-grade things. And and Punisher as well. So
yeah, that's right. He's got the Punisher.
He's got a bit of a history for us in our world.
Yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, there has been a talk about the remake of this movie for a while, and there's also been a couple of different attempts to get the cartoon series back out again.
Yeah, the 2002 Masters of the Universe that they did. And then they did one prior to that, which was 91, 92, I think it was, where he was in space.
Yeah.
So Space He-Man trying to go after Skeletor, who was trying to destroy another world. If I can't have Eternia, I'll have someone else.
Yeah,
so,
no, yeah. Skeletor got around.
Yeah, absolutely. Planet Whore. Planet Destroying Whore, should I say.
Destroying Whore.
Yeah.
Because he can't conquer him, he has to destroy him.
Yeah, that's right.
So when I was doing a bit of research about it, one of the reasons that the Masters of the Universe and He-Man came into play is that at the time, yeah, so Mattel had actually turned down Star Wars and the action figures for Star Wars, which was the biggest mistake they could have made.
That's right, and Kenner took them on instead,
Yeah, so they, having passed on that, they then tried to create their own.
The interesting thing about the Master Universe, the actual figures, was that They had this idea. It didn't work because they were trying to model it on Star Wars. What they did is they ended up having leftover, and if correct me if I'm wrong, that it was they used parts from a previous mold from another line that they did, which was unsuccessful, and so they came up. They'd already had sort of the character development, and they used these figures, rechanged them a little bit with their heads, etc. That's why the bodies stay the way they are, but the mold of the head is different.
Yeah.
And so that's how they came up with Masters of the Universe. And they only came out with four characters, I think, at the time. And then it just sort of exploded. You know, they had He-Man, Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, and I think it was Beast-Man. I think it was just like the main four characters, and that was it. And it just, once they came out, they just exploded.
Yeah. It was actually based on the Big Jim figure, looking at my notes
there
here.
There you go.
So there you go. You were spot on, figure. But it's a Big Jim figure that he used and did some claymation on to get the original characters out there, and that's what he presented in order to get He-Man up there.
Yeah.
And there was also some talk that He-Man was copying a little bit too much from Conan, which caused some legal issues before the...
Yeah, it did. And if you've ever seen them side by side, they're definitely, there's a very, very strong likeness there. A lot of the guys who were sculpting at that time on those toys were pretty much all mates, and they were all like in each other's pockets doing different jobs for different companies. So I was, you know, subbing themselves. So really, I mean, it was only a matter of time before, you know, those types of toys overlapped each other anyway. I mean, look at Transformers and GoBots. I mean, you know.
Yeah, because, you know, robots only sort of have limitations, but also barbarians are barbarians.
That's right.
If He-Man's going to be based on a barbarian character, he's going to look a lot like the penultimate barbarian, as we all know, as Conan.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
There's always going to be some conflict there.
Yeah.
So originally, then, the toys came out, that came out with little mini comic books.
Little mini comics.
And in those little mini comics, He-Man was a wandering barbarian rather than what he was then stylized in cartoon versions, which was Prince Adam of Eternia, who got his powers from holding aloft his magic sword.
The classic Lou Schwartz Filmation Company did that, and they were paved the way for new animation. They really did. They kind of brought an anime aspect to the Western country with their thoughts and ideas. They were the first company to actually bring out figures and a cartoon at the same time together to really sort of push the merchandise.
Yeah, one actually supported the other.
Yeah,
and they came
out
in tandem, and they were interlinked in that way.
Yeah, and a lot of cartoons now have followed that mold of, okay, we're going to bring out a cartoon, and here's all the merchandise that goes with it. Even before the cartoon's released, they've already got all the merchandise ready to rock and roll, you know. So you look at, like, your Adventure Times or, you know, even some of the older stuff.
Ben 10. Explorer.
Yeah, Dragon Ball Z, you know, all that sort of stuff. It's all based upon a toy that they want to get out into the marketplace.
Yeah, and as you were saying, this was the model of it. And for a few years there, it worked really well.
Yeah, and it worked. You know, it started the trend. It was Transformers, and it was G.I. Joe, and it was, you know, all those ones that are, you know, Voltron. They're all near and dear to our hearts. They all followed suit straight away after it. As soon as He-Man, they saw the success in He-Man, and, you know, they couldn't get enough of them on the shelves, and that was the start of something really big and exciting. I think that's what made 80s cartoons so exciting is that there was just all of this sort of, you know, hype and rush and excitement. Who's going to be the next character on the cartoon? Are they going to be the next, you know, character, you know, that's coming as an action figure?
And then you could actually touch and play and feel with it. So you weren't just limited to watching it. You could then create your own stories with your own figures. Yeah. The amount of times, like, my He-Man beat up my wrestling figures. I had old wrestling figures just to have enough villains for him to beat up. So, yeah, so that was a lot of interaction playing with my action figures back then. And I was a little kid, so don't judge me.
Don't judge me, fans.
I had a lot of fun with, you know, playing with those figures and intermixing storylines, creating stories in my head. And some of those stories, you know, then galvanated to be memories of the which, as I watched the cartoons, that's not what happened at all.
No, but I mean, you know, that, but sometimes they did, you know, and you go, oh, I was doing that just last week, you know, when they were battling and this happened. And I think that's what makes, you know, Masters of the Universe and those types of cartoon movie toy lines are really good, because they play on the imagination. You know, they really give you an opportunity to use your imagination and work out scenes and all that sort of thing. And I think that's what excites me about animation.
Yeah, and same here. If we were going to have a movie, well, obviously we wouldn't want the 1987 one remake, because it was horrible.
Grendel, he was like the Jar Jar Binks of Masters of the Universe, wasn't he? Grendel, the weirdo.
The Keymaster.
Oh, that's right, he was the Keymaster.
He was the Keymaster because they thought the...
Like, he wasn't the gatekeeper.
Yeah. They went with that character, I believe, because of the cost of the effects. To have a genuine orco floating through the air would have been a bit more than what the budget of that movie allowed. So I think that's why they went with him instead. But yeah.
I'm sure we would have hated Orko at the time too. So,
I think Orko will probably be the Jar Jar Binks of any remake if they do put him in. Yeah. So I think that's something they need to be careful about. When I'm thinking of a Masters of the Universe movie, I'm thinking it needs to be targeted a little bit to an older audience, mainly because the fans of Masters of the Universe, the people who collected the figures back in the day, we're now in our 30s and 40s and sharing this with our kids. So we have different sensibilities. And I think if you look at the evolution of cartoons along the way, they are getting a little bit more serious. Mm. Like when I watched the Turtles movie, where they went back and the whole universes were destroying, and all the 80s Turtles and messing with the 90s Turtles, etc., etc. You could really see the difference from the 80s sensibility and the 80s sense of humor and how we went about it to just even that short jump to the 90s and then to today. So I think audiences are a little bit more, the audience for this will be a little bit more mature than the audiences from back in the 80s. Yeah. And we need to be entertained as well, because it's our dollars that are going to drive it, not just our kids. So yeah, the kids might love it, but they're only going to want to see it once.
They'll be definitely deep, there'll be sort of deeper moments within the film, whoever, you know, sort of takes it on. I mean, I always envisaged it to be, tell the history, you know, so looking at like King He, like how it began, and then moving into Adam, you know, sort of being this sort of layabout, something happens, he then gets, he then either kills or injures somebody and goes on a quest and finds Grayskull, finds the sword and becomes He-Man. So he becomes this, you know, reluctant hero rather than, you know, just this guy who runs in and just all of a sudden becomes He-Man. And it's similar to what they did in 2002. Yep. It's similar to what they did with the mini comics, how he was a wandering, you know, sort of barbarian. And I think that would help to really sort of give that real big push, you know. And in the storyline, what would be great is to find out that he actually didn't kill that person, that, you know, it was actually Skeletor who had planned it all along to remove him as heir and that type of thing. So you've got all these layers that would be great for a mature audience, but for the kids, it's all the action and the fun and the humor and, you know, the characters that go with it.
And the fight scenes between the different, like in the 2002 movie, just seeing the different minions of each side sort of going against each other and using their particular abilities.
Lots of martial arts too was used in that one. And I think that would be really nice to see, as a lot of not only sword play, but also using like lots of mixed mediums, you know, in action. And I think that would be a lot of fun because, I mean, you've got like Man at Arms who uses a lot of weaponry, you know,
Trapjaw's got all the different implements that you can sort of use.
So you've got all those different options where you can really sort of push those mixed mediums, which would be a lot of fun too.
When I was having a think about how I would do the movie and the story I would look at, it would depend if you wanted to include the Shearer character as well for any potential sequel or spin-off. And part of the storyline of Shearer is that she's actually kidnapped by Hordak when she's a baby, and she's the twin sister of He-Man. So one of the reasons for He-Man to grow up sheltered, I thought, would be that being that his twin sister was taken when he was a baby, would be that his mother could potentially be mothering him too much and taking him out of the action, which is why he hasn't trained up and why he's developed that,
that sort of attitude. I see that too. I think that would flow really well with, you know, what I was talking about, and even to the point where the king really, similar to like Thor, disapproves of his son, thinks he's a layabout, thinks he's nowhere to the throne at all, and
very sheltered, you know, very not really up to it, and not really looking for it. He can become that
reluctant hero.
And another spin, another thing I was thinking of is that he could be a wannabe hero, but he's been so henpecked by his mother and so protected and coddled by everybody, that could be one of the reasons he could then flee the castle to look for adventure because he can't do it as Adam, and then comes back as He-Man after having done that quest. Mm. So there's another take that you could potentially do.
Which is similar to what they did with the 2010 or 11 Thundercats cartoon series, which they did with Lion-O. Instead of making him this young boy who was frozen in time and became an adult but still had that teenage mind, he actually was the teenager who had no choice but to become the hero because the kingdom fell. Yeah. So, you know, there's a couple of, you know, different avenues that they can go down and elements which they can really deep root and have a really good third act for, which leads it, which they could, you know, if they did it well, could lead into the, you know, the second film franchise, which is then finding the sister, you know, going on the quest to find the sister and, you know, discovering Hordak and, you know, all that type
of thing. And that introduces the Horde element. That's right. You know, then grows the story out. So start contained with Skeletor and finding out about the history of Skeletor. Then from that, finding out about his sister, and that then can jump into the next movie. So
I'd love to see really big battle scenes. You know, it's not just He-Man and Skeletor. Like in the 80s film, it was just like one-on-ones. It was a lot of one-on-ones. I'd love to see big battle scenes. So, like, Skeletor doesn't just have, you know, his main minions. He's got an army of dead, you know, that have risen from the ground, you know, have risen from the ground. And He-Man's got, you know, Man-at-Arms got his, you know, battalion. And He-Man's managed to rally all his masters, but they've also got their minions as well. And one big, huge, you know, Lord of the Rings type style battle.
And I think that would be a good even opening for it, because if you look, and I'm harking back to only because I watched it yesterday, the 2002 opening episodes, it started with King Randor, at the time not King Randor, but it did start with a big battle, and that's what caused the schism and then landed the peace. So you could have that big battle where you're introducing some of those masters as younger characters, and then they are He-Man's confidants and support as when he gets older and actually takes up the mantle. So you could have a good battle, a big battle there at the start, and then the climactic battle, which ultimately ends with He-Man facing off against Skeletor.
Yeah.
And obviously you'd want Skeletor to escape because you want him to go back to Hordak. And
it's almost like the final ending would be great as a repeat of the beginning, you know, but it's just a different character. You know, because originally it was Keldor. So it was King Randor fighting Keldor in the cartoon. But you could even go back further and show King He, who actually loses the sword and gets killed. Then it's King Randor who finds the sword and takes up against Keldor. Keldor obviously loses his face, spoiler alert, and becomes Skeletor. So there's lots of you know, elements that they can tell that sort of story, or they can leave that King He story for another time, which then adds another element to the power of Grayskull and, you know, etc.
Yeah, when he takes
up
into the next, into his next phase.
Yeah.
We've talked a lot about the history of He-Man and all those sort of things, but now we really need to do what we're actually here to do, which is cast the movie. But I think one of the first discussions we're probably going to need to do is have a discussion about what characters should be involved, because there's such a history of very different characters. Who have you sort of flagged that you think we should be considering for the first movie?
Yeah, it was funny. I was going through the list of characters before we did this, and I was thinking, how am I going to, you know, sort of narrow it down? Because it is the masters of the universe. And so when you say the word universe, yeah, it kind of, there is so many characters that can fill it. I kind of went back to the basics, back to the fan faves, and had the regular Skeletor minions. You know, Beastman, Triclops, Trapjaw, Merman, you know, that was kind of where I was sort of seeing. And then going into, obviously, with He-Man, it's like Stratos, Ram-Man, Man-at-Arms, Teela, that type of thing.
I also would throw in Evil-Lyn just to get the gender balance right from Skeletor's side.
Yep.
And she's a good foil for Skeletor because she's a powerful sorceress as well, and sort of has her eye on the prize as well.
Yeah, she
so
was
a good contradictory element.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I think Evil-Lyn would need to be Asian. I would like to see Evil-Lyn in an Asian element rather than because of that whole sorcery and, you know, and someone with martial arts skills that you know, when they're conjuring up this, that, you know, whatever it is that they are, they can use that sort of fluent martial arts, or like a Michelle Yao or a Kelly Yu or someone along those lines that could really sort of, almost like The Last Airbender, where they're sort of, you know, using that sort of chi movement to conjure up an evil...
Yeah, I actually see that. I reckon that would work really well. And that's a good character to change, though. So obviously that's not who I picked for Evil-Lyn.
Who'd you pick again for Evil-Lyn?
Oh, I popped up a couple of different ones. I think Paulie Perrette from NCIS.
Yeah.
I just would like to see her in something other than NCIS. And I think she's got a great look about her. So I nominated her as a potential one. But I actually like where you're going there. I think getting an Asian actress in there, and the two that you mentioned are really good.
Mm.
So that's probably where I would go with Evil-Lyn as well, to try and build up that Asian element.
Did you have King Randor in there at all? Did you have, like, King and Queen?
Dina Meyer is Queen, Marlena.
Yep, I can see that. I had either Jeff Bridges or Kurt Russell for the role.
I like Kurt Russell.
For the role.
Yeah, Kurt Russell's someone I also considered as a Man-at-Arms. Yeah. Like, him in Soldier.
Yeah.
I thought he had, and that was not too long ago, but he had that sort of physique.
But once again, he can rock a tash. He's aging.
He's aging a lot, and he can do a tash. He did so in Tombstone, so I thought he was an option for there. But him as King Randor, I think, could work as well.
Yeah, and he's got that. He can have that menacing quality, you know, that really unsupportive father role, and he'd do that very well. And having him at the beginning fighting, you know, you could younger him a little bit, and he could still, you know, fight Keldor, and it would work really well.
Jason Statham with hair at the start and bald as the king.
Yeah. With Sorceress, I don't think that you necessarily need someone who is an A character. I think that she's just sort of there to guide, to prompt, and sort of is a sideline mentor to Man-at-Arms. You know, she's the mentor to becoming He-Man, but then Man-at-Arms is both Adam and He-Man's mentor, regardless. Yep. You know, he's the confidant. So for Sorceress, I actually had my top pick was Ashley Judd in the role of the Sorceress.
Okay.
You know, she's kind of got that sort of motherly sort of touch, but she's not afraid to kick ass either. In her last TV series that she did, which was, can't even remember the name of it, was that bad?
Taken or Chased or something. Yeah, Sun Got Taken.
So she's got a physicality to her that she could actually do that quite well. Either that or Claudia Black, who was in, obviously, SG-1. She was also in Farscape. She could play the Sorceress quite well, and she's got the accent for it too, which would give it a different element again. So I kind of see it being an older, sort of a 40-plus character role, but someone who's not afraid to get their hands dirty either, with a little bit of physicality if they need to.
Yeah.
To defend Grayskull.
No, I'm happy to go with that.
For Ram Man, I actually had Dominic Purcell. I had, who was originally from Prison Break.
Australian actor.
Yeah, I had him as a, because I mean he's very, very tall and he's quite built as well. But saying that, you could also have someone like Ving Rhames as Ram Man. The problem that I find is with racial stereotyping is that when you put someone in that race, you've got to make sure that you give them a good personality. So yep. If you put like an African American in, say, Ram Man, who's dumb, then the African American audience are going to say, "Well, do you think we're dumb?" You know, that's how they're going to. And I think that unfortunately for He-Man at the time, we were in and it was a bit like Super Friends, the cartoon, where they had to implement African American characters.
To get
a racial balance right. And I think that they would need to do that with this one too, is get a racial balance.
I think that also means bringing in an Asian quality as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
China is obviously the big market, and I sort of mentioned it in the last podcast.
Yes.
It's Iron Man 3 going... Yep.
Well, they're changing some scenes. Yeah.
And Transformers 4, a lot of that's actually going to be filmed in China as well. They've just announced that they've made an arrangement to film a number of extra scenes in China. So China is the next big market, so I think you need to add that mix into it as well.
You know, someone like Evil-Lyn, she's got a great character. You know,
she's smart. She's intelligent. She's one of the dominating characters.
Yeah, absolutely. So an Asian market would see that as something that they would really grasp onto and love, whereas I would be very skeptical of putting someone of an African-American descent or an Asian descent into a Ram Man sort of role. I'd rather put someone who's Caucasian, who's quite happy to play someone who's a little bit dumb.
Thick.
Yeah.
What is your take on wrestlers as actors?
Yeah, oh, look, you could put someone like Batista or, one of the newer wrestlers into the role of a Ram Man. The only problem is, once again, is that you've got all these wrestling fans who are going, "Well, do you think wrestling is dumb?" You know,
yeah, but wrestling is dumb, and I'm a fan of wrestling, so I'm allowed to say
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely,
I would love to see Paul White as the giant Ram Man.
Yep.
I think he's got the size and the physicality. He's a bit fatter, a bit muscular, and I think he could do that really well. And he plays that character as his WWE character as well.
Yeah.
So he's someone who I would have thought would make a good Ram Man.
Interesting. Yeah.
Man at Arms for me is, when I was investigating this and having a look at what other fan casts have been put together for a He-Man movie, Tom Selleck, because of the moustache, is always someone who's nominated. As Man at Arms, and that was my reaction when I first started reading it, over and over and over again.
Yep.
He seems to be a fanboy favorite for the role, and I think it is purely based on the moustache. But when I started thinking about it and actually thought of him as an actor and remembering some of the things that he's done, I actually think he could play the role and would bring an element in there that fans will like because of the moustache. But he could also pull off that leadership, warrior, old general type role and mentor to He-Man.
Yeah, he Tom Selleck does a regular movie series that he produces every year called Jesse Stone, which is based on a bunch of books. And he plays like a hardened cop who's an alcoholic and runs a small town. And he kind of has that mentor role. And so I can see what you're saying in that. He'd be actually really good in that. My only concern is that he might be a little too old.
That was my thought
as well. To play Man at Arms. I had in mind for Man at Arms, actually, Gerard Butler rocking the moustache.
Yeah, he can rock a moustache.
You know, he's kind of that right age. He's got a bit of built. He's done a couple of action films, so he's not afraid to do that type of thing. Other than that, You could go down the lines of John Hamm from Mad Men.
Mad Men, yeah.
Along that line, or even Eric Banner, for that instance.
No, you know. Eric Banner's not someone I would have originally considered. And I think Man at Arms being a co-starring role, I think you can have an actor of that caliber in that role, because they're going to play a major part as his main mentor.
Yeah.
And it's one of the few characters that you're going to see the face most of the time. So I think that's important as well.
Yeah.
Put a face with a face.
Yeah. I think for me, when I was casting this, and I think this is for those that you'll understand why I'm actually thinking of these people, is that the budget is going to be massive. So you need a large, you know, you need a very, very large sort of head to the film. And then your cast members around that. So like your He-Man, your Skeletor need to be like your top billers,
yeah,
and then everybody underneath that can be sort of, you know, your second tier or even your B grade sort of actors as the support, because the CGI in this film, you know, the landscaping, the everything that's involved in it is going to be on a massive scale. You know, you're probably looking about $200-$250 million film.
Yeah, if they're going to do it the way that we'd want it done, it would have to be that. And you can't have all that just because it's an ensemble cast. You can't have every dollar into your cast members.
Yeah,
so I think that's important to consider as well.
And that's why I'm saying, you know, some of these other, you know, so like Man at Arms, like a Jarrod Butler, he's not an expensive actor. You know, you've seen him do a lot of sort of average films.
Yeah, now. A lot of B-grade comedies.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's sort of dropped off that pedestal since, you know,
that's right.
300. So he's down into that second
bracket. Same with Eric Banner. Same with John Hamm. He's a familiar face. He's good on the eye for the ladies. You know, that's the other thing too. You want to make sure that you don't have ugly characters, you know, that they are sort of suited towards multiple demographics.
Yeah. So that was Man at Arms. Who do you think for his adopted daughter, Tiwa?
Tiwa, I actually had... Now, Tiwa has always been sort of a sexual icon for the boys.
Yeah.
And she needs to be good looking, but she's got to have a good physique and would work well within an action sort of sequence. I kind of went down the line and once again, sort of going into that B grade, well, lower tier. I shouldn't say B grade, but lower tier. I would say I'm torn, Jessica Biel for the role of Tiwa.
Okay, yeah.
Or Olivia Wilde.
Who's one of your favourites?
Who's one of my faves. Because she was great in Tron Uprising. You know, she was great in that role, Olivia Wilde. And Jessica Biel, because I really liked her in Blade 3, so in Blade Trinity.
Okay,
So, she wasn't afraid to do those action sequences. So I could see her, you know, because she's tall and slender and all that sort of stuff. Olivia Wilde's a little bit shorter, so she'd probably be my second pick. But, yeah, I'd probably go for Jessica Biel.
Well, I went Rachel Nichols. I went for a younger, and I didn't go for an A-grade name in the role. I went for someone who's a little bit younger. And for very similar reasons to what you were just describing there, for the physicality and those sort of things.
Trapjaw was an interesting one for me. I see him as he's kind of torn. You know, he's become what he is because of the accident that happened that removed his, you know, the lower half of his face.
Yeah.
So he's an outcast from Eternia, and that's why he hooks up with Skeletor. So he doesn't want to be a bad guy, but he is a bad guy because he's forced to be a bad guy. That's kind of the way I see Trapjaw's character. And so that's why I chose the more reluctant tinkerer, you know, who will fight because he's an outcast. He's more angry at Eternia and those who are involved because they've sent him away, you know, because he looks different from everybody else. That's kind of how I see him. I could only see one person, and for Game of Thrones fans, they I don't know whether they'll agree or disagree with me, but he played Theon Greyford. So he was Alfie Allen. And he's kind of, the way I see Trapjaw is that he's not a good looking man anyway. And Alfie Allen, he's got that very sort of thin, pale physique as well. A lot of Trapjaw's abilities come from his equipment, not from the actual man himself. In the 2002 cartoon, they gave him a very sort of very, very strong, very, you know,
muscular build.
much bigger than He-Man as well. Whereas I don't see that. I kind of see Trapjaw being kind of this guy who has the ability to create inventions and stuff like that, and give him the ability also to be able to fight. Yeah. And use those inventions that he's created. So giving him more of a thinner physique built around his inventions that he creates.
Okay.
That's kind of how I see him being.
I see him a little bit differently. I sort of think the Trapdoor character could potentially be the big bad,
yep,
against the other characters, because of the inventions and the implements he's got. So I actually went something different. I wanted someone who was bigger and badder and... could come across as that little bit evil. So I went for Adam Copeland.
Okay.
WWE fans, yeah, again. That's, yeah, why I asked you before.
Yeah.
There's Edge, the Rated R superstar.
Yeah.
He's got a massive jawline anyway.
Yeah.
But I went, and I think if he's going to be your type of character, I actually think you've chosen well. If you're going to go down that path where he's a tinkerer with his equipment and it's more about the equipment than the man inside it. But I think for someone who's going to have a physical menace over He-Man's allies... And if you're going to give that role to Trapjaw, it doesn't necessarily have to be him. You could use Beastman or Triclops.
Yeah.
Then I think you need an actor with physical stature in there, which is why I did actually nominate Adam Copeland. Well, who would you see then taking up a role like I've described as being the big bad that everyone...
I would say Triclops, because Triclops has those three different eyes.
Yeah.
That kind of gives him three different personalities as well, if you remember in the original cartoon. You know, when the eye changed, the personality changed as well. A bit like they did with...
Many Faces,
yeah. And I would see Armie Hammer in that role. He hasn't been in a lot of roles, but he's got a fairly big physique. I mean, even someone like Tom Hardy?
Tom Hardy,
yeah, who played Bane would be very good in that role as well. The only problem with Tom Hardy is that he's becoming more of an A-line star now.
It'd be very hard to get him into that sort of role.
Into that sort of role, and that's why I thought Armie Hammer would be good in that type of role. He's very beefy. He's very tall. He's one of the taller men in Hollywood at the moment, too.
Yeah, provided he doesn't take off with Lone Ranger and become a superstar.
Well, that's exactly right. I mean, unfortunately, I don't think that Lone Ranger is going to do as well as they want it to. It'll make its money, but it won't get a sequel to it, I don't think, at this
stage. That's a Johnny Depp movie, really.
Yeah.
So it's Johnny Depp's Tonto, which is what they're doing all the advertising around.
Yes,
so,
yeah, definitely.
He might not make it there, but you know, if he can't make it there, maybe you can...
Yeah, I'd love to see it. I think that Triclops being that, you know, multiple personality would definitely work in favour of being the big bad, the more menacing, because then he's, you know, that when that eye switches, that, you know, he becomes... And it's a bit like Bane, you know, taking the juice, and he gets larger and bigger and stupider and, you know, more menacing. So I think the same type of thing. Not that I'm confusing, you know, Tom Hardy's Bane with Triclops, but yeah, along that line.
Got to have Stratos.
Got to have Stratos. He's like a pinnacle character, and I mean he's the air assault. So you've got to have someone. I think Buzzoff would be a character that you'd introduce later.
Yeah, no, your first one needs to be Stratos,
and it's got to be Stratos. I thought someone like Josh Lucas would be an interesting role.
You wouldn't go a black actor.
Like
has been in.
Well, you can be. You can. I mean, you could definitely bring in an
African American
role.
Because we haven't got an African American role all up to this point.
Someone like Michael, I think it's Eli. He was in like 7 Pounds. He was in Underworld Awakenings. He played the detective in Underworld Awakenings.
Okay, yeah.
He could play a really good Stratos if you were going down the African American side of things. That would be my choice if I was going to go for that.
Well, I've nominated Aldous Hodge. He's from the TV show Leverage.
Yep.
He's got the physical. I think he's got the physical presence, and
it's definitely a B grade. He's not
going to cost you top dollar. No. And he's someone who will break through, though. I think he's got potential down the track to break through. And getting him in there now will give some longevity to the film. So that's what I nominated as Stratos.
Yep.
And with his height and size, you can sort of match it. Standing alongside whoever we're going to pick as He-Man. Skeletor. Now,
Skeletor.
I think we've covered the minions. Let's get down to the true stars of this piece.
Well, the reason that I actually brought Tom Hardy up was actually because I think he'd make a great Skeletor.
Okay.
I think he'd make a really great Skeletor. He, once again, he doesn't do the voice of Bane. I think he would be really good as a Keldor. He's got the right physique for it. He needs to be equal to whoever He-Man will be. And I think that someone like Tom Hardy in the makeup and all that sort of thing would be really good to go up against, because he's not afraid of action. He's an A-liner. Women would go and see him regardless of having a deformed skeletal face.
And if you're starting the movie off without the deformity, then you're going to see, you're going to get enough of him.
You're going to get a blue Tom Hardy anyway. You're going to get an Avatar Hardy anyway. So he's in there. You see him. And then, you get to that halfway switch where he is Skeletor. It's not going to matter because, I mean, it was like they did with in Captain America, how they, with Red Skull, they didn't show Red Skull straight away. They gave, him a persona first before he became...
Before
you saw him, you know, without his face.
I had a couple of different options. Like I threw out there someone like Tim Roth.
Right, yep.
But as you're saying, if we're going to try and match him up against He-Man and we're going to go down the path of him physically matching He-Man, then he needs to be preserved. If you're going to use the Keldor character as Randor's brother or half-brother, then you can go older.
Yeah.
But if you then want to have the process preserve him enough so that he's actually going to be a physical match for He-Man, then someone like a Tom Hardy could then come in and be that physical match for him. So it sort of really depends... Are you going Skeletor and is he going to be a CG character predominantly, or are you going to have a man
in blue
makeup?
Yeah, I would have a man in blue makeup, and I would give him that CG face. Probably not going down the lines of Ghost Rider with that awful Skeletor face.
Really like that,
I'm thinking that it would be really nice to see them really work on that sort of skeletal facial area, even to the point where, he still does look very human, but the skin is so pulled back and so bleached white that it gives that element
that it
looks skeletal, but he's still got that muscular, almost like what they've done with the Joker in the comics, that sort of pulled back, very thin looking, but the rest of the body is out of proportion,
that's why
he wears the shroud or the hood, to cover a lot of that element.
And that also helps with the effects. If you're going to have the face glowing under the hood, you can sort of keep it hidden a lot.
Yeah.
And that's why I picked a couple of the other nominations that are put forward, because it then also comes back to the voice. And does the body model need to be, and can you just have someone doing a voice and just use another actor, being that you're covering the face? Like another physical model being the Skeletor, but use someone else's voice, which is someone like a Jeremy Irons, who I think's got an awesome voice. Mark Strong is someone else that I also considered.
Yep.
Mark Strong could also, he was fantastic as Sinestro, so I think
he was great as Sinestro. The only concern, once again, I have is that we get an aging cast. We've got to be mindful of, when He-Man goes up against Skeletor, you want to make sure that they look like that they're going to go up against each other.
That physical side.
Yeah, that they are both right on the money to be able to. You can say he's going to give He-Man a good go. Whereas when they did the 80s film and it was
Franklin Langella.
Yeah. He wasn't really a good match, it was more about staves and shooting rays and stuff like that. And that was because Frank was just too old to do the role of
but
Skeletor.
But he had the voice. But if my suggestion there is, though, if you're going to be able to change, if you're going to have a CG's face for Skeletor, then the actor who's physically playing the role doesn't necessarily need to be the voice of Skeletor.
Well, it also cuts the budget on Armie Hammer too.
Yeah. So
he can be played by a wrestler, and the Skeletor part can be played by a wrestler, and Tom Hardy can have his 15 minutes of fame in there, and
just talking of doing the voice.
Doing
the start as Keldor until he gets his face melted off, Skeletor. So I think that's why some of the nominations I put forth. I really like Jeremy Irons' voice, Mark Strong's voice, and I'd go probably a voice actor and use that rendering to get Skeletor to be the physical match of He-Man.
Yeah.
Best move along to He-Man now.
This one was really difficult for me because my theory is going along the lines of the whole, he doesn't look the same. He's not the same person. It's got to be two actors. It's got to be Adam is one and He-Man is another.
So you don't want to go down the path they did with Captain America, where they had him on a smaller body and then buffed out once he got out?
Well, I mean, they could definitely do that. And that would work really, really well. But if you remember, that was only for a short time and it cost them a bucket load of cash to do.
Yeah, so obviously, and if He-Man is supposed, and if Adam is supposed to disguise the fact that he is He-Man,
yeah.
If he turns out and he looks exactly the same, just with bigger muscles, it's then obvious that he is He-Man. And in the cartoons, they tend to use the same character. Like in the 80s cartoon, he had a pink shirt on, so no one thought he was He-Man.
That's right.
Whereas
he was dancing in clubs in YouTube. So, yeah.
So, now in this case, I think he definitely you'd need two actors.
Yeah, definitely two different. I would go down the lines of Adam as someone like Liam Hemsworth, Australian actor. He's up and coming. He's got the physicality to him. But at the same time, he can play that really good sort of reluctant hero role. Liam was in Spendables 2, and he's also in Hunger Games. So he can really sort of play that rock that role. I think really really well.
Is he physically overmatched as an Adam though? Because he's quite well built as well.
Well, see, Adam could go down that path where he's had all the training and all that sort of stuff, but he really doesn't want to do it. You know, he could have that physique about being more of a, you know, look at me, I'm cool and I'm strong and I'm muscular and hey ladies, you know, type deal.
Yeah.
But really, nothing else matches to the way he looks. You know, it's all talk and no action type deal.
No, I could go with that.
Ryan, I think it's Quentin.
Isn't he from True Blood?
He's from True Blood as well.
I think him as from True Blood, he'd be playing the same character.
Yeah.
Do you think he's actually would be a good choice as being a bit of a layabout Adam character?
Yeah. He's not too old. He sits in the pocket of sort of sitting around that sort of late teen, early 20s sort of character.
Yeah, I think he could pull that off. Yeah, actually, yeah.
And He-Man, I can't get past. For some reason, I can't get past Ryan Gosling playing the role as of He-Man. Yeah, beef him up, give him a really. You know, I mean, it's like what they did with Chris Hemsworth. You know, when he went into the role of Thor, they were like, nah, he's not going to do it. You know, he's not.
Yeah, he bulked up.
He's not going to be Thor. He can't do the role of it. So, I mean, and I have a problem with, you know, someone like them putting, like, someone like Chris Hemsworth, putting him in the role of He-Man because he's already Thor.
Yeah, and that's a big problem because he would be perfect otherwise.
Like Ryan Reynolds, when they put him as Green Lantern and he's already Deadpool. And,
you only see him as Deadpool.
That's how you see him. And so I have a really big problem. So I would think that if you wanted to really pull a crowd, then someone like Ryan Gosling, get him to grow his hair, build him like this, get him to eat 12 chickens a day, and I reckon he would really sort of sit in the pocket as a He-Man.
Hugh Jackman did the same thing when he got the Wolverine role. He put on the muscle and he laid it on. It only took about 6 to 8 weeks for him to start getting some size on him.
And look at him. I mean, he's an amazing Wolverine. You can't cast anybody else in the role of Wolverine.
Yeah, he's got that locked in for years and years to come.
In the 80s, I mean, technically Wolverine is not supposed to be as tall.
No, he's supposed to be like a short fella, just short and wide.
He's 5'5" or something or other and very short, but, you know, he makes up for with his abilities. I always were hoping that they'd put Bruce Willis in the role of Wolverine because he's got that, you know, he's got that physique and ability, height, you know, he works perfectly in the pocket. But now Wolverine is this built, muscular, confident, no worries, I'll take you on guy. Yeah,
and
you know?
Hugh Jackman
fills the role.
Forever be our Wolverine.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, when I was looking to cast it, I actually looked for some younger actors who are unknown because if you can't have Chris Hemsworth, who I think physically would be perfect, then I went someone who was unknown and who could build. So Callum Lutz, I think. Callum Lutz is the one I would ultimately choose.
And he was from
Twilight movies. So
yeah.
I think he'd bring in a little bit of the Twilight crowd, but just younger and just the physical size of him. But for budget reasons, it would also work well. So that's who I went. I went Callum Lutz. Ryan Gosling, I think, is nominated by everyone for everything, and I don't think you'd be able to get him. And I don't think, although...
I worry about having a no-name in a He-Man role, and the reason I say that is because of the response that John Carter from Mars got.
Yeah.
You know, they had, Taylor Kitsch in it. And nobody knew who Taylor Kitsch was at the time. He was from Friday Night Lights.
And a lot of people over here, for example, hadn't seen that because it was only big in America.
That's right. And so not a lot of people knew who he was. And so it didn't do... I mean, even in the States. I mean, I saw it in the States and I was sitting in an audience and it was premiere day and I was one of eight sitting in the cinema. I love that film. I thought it was a great film. They did a really good job with it.
So did
I.
So you must be the other person.
Yeah, and I thought it was a lot of fun. But the problem is that they took From Mars out of the title.
Yeah, it should have left it in there.
John Carter from Mars, so the people got it.
Yeah.
And I think it was too close to Avatar. It was only a couple of years after Avatar. They kind of needed to, and it was a similar type storyline where, you know, you were traveling from one planet to another to save it, the human, you know, that population.
Special abilities, et cetera.
And so that was the problem, and that's what I worry about He-Man is putting a no-name He-Man and then a great supporting cast, and nobody goes and sees it because they don't know who the guy is.
What about Jared Padalecki from Supernatural? He missed out on Superman, he missed out on Conan.
I don't think
he's got a physical size, I reckon he's got the look. He's got the hair.
Yeah, I would see Jared Padalecki as Adam, not as He-Man. I I love Supernatural. Don't get me wrong. Big fan. Watched it from the beginning all the way through. Can't miss an episode. But I just don't see Jared Padalecki as my He-Man. You know, I see him... it's got to be that transformation where it's an older 30s character. You know, he goes from sort of 20s to 30s, builds up the physique. He's got the look, you know, it's got to be that transformation. It can't be, for me anyway, it can't be Clark Kent taking off his glasses and all of a sudden becomes Superman. Nobody knows that it's him.
Yeah.
You know, he's got to be different. And I worry that even if you chose, say, someone like a Liam Hemsworth or a Ryan Quanten, that when it becomes Jared Padalecki, there's kind of a similarity of
in ages.
Yeah. You know?
So you want to have a complete difference.
It's got to be, you know, when you put them together, when you put, like, say, Ryan Gosling and Liam Hemsworth together in the same similar, you know, hair and all that sort of stuff, you can say, okay, I can see them as brothers, or I can see them, you know, him, when Liam Hemsworth aged, he's going to look like him. You know, it's kind of got to be that casting that you kind of go, he looks like someone I know, but...
He's obviously not that
person. It's not that person, but he can't be, you know?
Yeah.
And you could definitely have someone like Teela, who's relatively intelligent, going, don't I know you from somewhere? You seem familiar, you know?
I think they have to play up on that because... You don't want them to, love the Superman movies, but all he's done is take his glasses off.
That's right.
And you has to be more than that for when Adam converts to He-Man. So I can see where you're going with what you're saying there, and we'll agree. I'll have to agree to agree rather than disagree, because that is my big thing about this. If you're going to keep the Adam character as hiding the fact that he's He-Man and keep coming back to him, then you need an actor who's going to be able to do more than just be a lazy layabout, but you also need to be He-Man to be totally different so that they are two different characters. And I think if this extends beyond one movie and goes into multiple movies, I think the Adam character has to develop because the He-Man's going to stay the same.
Yeah.
And so that comes back to, do you really want a Ryan Gosling just being a muscle man as He-Man, or do you want to put more effort into picking the right Adam and using Adam as the main character and have his art going through,
and having Jason Momoa as the He-Man character?
Probably not Jason Momoa, someone of a similar vein who is just the big muscle, but you're actually focusing more on Adam. And the arc from the beginning of the movie series to the end of the series is Adam developing to a point where he is actually becoming He-Man. So He-Man is actually ultimately who he really is.
Yep.
If he developed that way to the point where he doesn't need to be He-Man anymore,
yep.
Adam is now the master of the universe.
Yeah.
So that's another arc that you can take, which means you probably put a bit more effort in picking the right Adam. And then you could just go like someone big and beefy and then you probably wouldn't need to go an A-grade name like a Ryan Gosling and get him to beef up.
The only problem is you've got the older fan, you've got the older fans who expect He-Man to be a particular persona, you know. So you really have to get whoever you're going to put in that role of He-Man, he's got to be someone that people go, yep, he's my He-Man. You know, he's the man. Not like Dolph Lundgren. Oh, by the way, Dolph Lundgren. I wanted to have Dolph Lundgren in there. He's got to have a support cameo somewhere along the line.
I don't like him as King Randall because I think King Randall has a lot of dialogue.
No.
And I wouldn't want him in that role.
I'd like to see him in the role of King He.
Yeah.
The original.
And you have him as not having that much dialogue.
No.
You'd be having him in the background. And just the image that someone actually on another site has put up of just him sitting on the throne with the sword and head down, like Conan.
Yeah.
In the Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones.
That's, having him sit there like that.
Yep.
He's still got a good enough physique and the look, and he looks tired now.
Yep.
He looks tired and worn, like the pressures of all the weight of the world's been on him. When you have a look at his face and how he presents in Expendables, that's what he's looking like now. That just to have to just sit down and be at rest, I think that image would be fantastic for Dolph Lundgren to go out on.
The way I see that whole King He thing playing out would be that he could be in Grayskull as a spiritual being, because they do go down the spiritual side of things for He-Man and where the essence comes from and all that sort of stuff. And having him not like Yoda or Obi-Wan in the blue, but having him in that sort of aura-ish sort of state and passing on the mantle, passing on the sword.
Yeah, for that element.
He passes the sword. So rather than the sorceress doing it, the sorceress is the mediator between the two worlds. And so allowing King He to hand off the mantle to Adam now to become He-Man.
And that imagery would work well with handing over from the 87 movie to the new movie, and you are now He-Man.
That's right.
That's his big tick of approval. You are now going to be He-Man.
Yeah, so. and that sort of, you know, sort of joins the worlds and gives it a really good, you know, sort of gooiness to it, if you want to call it that, you know.
No, I think that would gel well.
Yeah.
I think that sort of ends our time talking He-Man. Obviously, I've picked the right person. You have enough passion on He-Man and knowledge of the subject that your opinions and thoughts were quite valued and quite valuable.
Yeah, all I say is Hollywood, throw us the dollars now. We'll write the script for you. So
we'll write the script. And
that's right. Cast them. We've got it set up. Just give us the money and we're ready to go.
And we'll rock and roll. We'll film it in Australia. So the Australian dollar's a bit strong now, but they'll give you $20 million to film a movie down
there. I reckon Australia and New Zealand, film it in within those two countries and write it as a 3-film franchise.
Definitely 3-film franchise.
And write it all at the same time and film it back to back.
And that's why you're going to bring in Hordak. You're going to have the Horde and Shira. So we could do a part 2 if we actually get the get the money. We'll do a part 2 of the podcast so we can tell people who we're picking for Shira and for Hordak.
Sounds like a plan.
All right. Well, thank you very much for that, Nath. Well,
there you go, folks. That was Nath and I talking all things Masters of the Universe. Next episode, Nathan and I will actually go in depth and talking about Wacky Races, a personal favourite of mine. You can catch us on our Facebook site. We'll just search for Fantasy Casting Agency. So I'll catch you for the next episode, and thank you for listening. May your fan casting news be good news. And good night.
No.
Apparently not.
I'll
step
too far.
Okay.
podcast was brought to you by the Big Top Network.